This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to The Morning Run this Friday, the 18th of November. I'm Melissa Idris and I've got with me Ibrahim Sani. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. It's Friday.
You are so chirpy on a Friday. I know you're planning your weekend.
Yeah, it's you know, this weekend is going to be very interesting. We're going to have a short runaway to Negris Milan.
Like a mini getaway with the family.
Yeah, mini getaway.
Family, okay, fantastic. Well, thank you for starting your day with us here on The Morning Run. Do stay with us till 10 o'clock for a whole host of interesting interviews, including The Breakfast Grill. Julian Ng will be speaking to Dato' Lim Kwang Sia, Managing Director of Kosan Rubber Industries, the rubber glove manufacturer Kosan. Are they considered one of the bigger players, would you say, in the market?
I would say yes. While we know for a fact that the biggest rubber glove company in the world is Top Glove, they have 25% of the global market share. That means one in every four, you know, gloves in the world is actually, you know, belongs to Top Glove. Mm-hmm. Kosan is up there, however. It's trying to wrestle away the market share.
Yeah, they're trying to embark yet on another expansion program to increase their production capacity. And what they've done now is no longer just focusing on medical supply, surgical rubber gloves, but now they are tying up with the Malaysian Rubber Board to produce products for the construction sector. So I'm really curious to see what kind of rubber latex products are we talking about for construction?
Actually, because I thought it would be more rough, thick for construction, but very interesting.
Interesting. Well, let's find out a bit more with Dato' Lim Kwang Sia, Managing Director of Kosan Rubber, on The Breakfast Grill. And this Sunday, Ibrahim, is actually Children's Day. It's World Children's Day. So essentially, a day to be observed of worldwide fraternity and understanding between children. Every year we celebrate it on BFM, but because it's a Sunday, we want to celebrate it today.
which is you know, sensible, I suppose.
Sensible, that's right. Just to remind everyone that, you know, not to forget our children. In fact, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon had made this statement. This year, I wish to emphasize the importance of ensuring that the commitments made by the international community to the world's children are extended to a group of children who are often forgotten or overlooked, those deprived of their liberty.
You know, when we get these stories, right, from, you know, the children in Syria, the children of the Rohingyas, for instance, only then, I believe, that do we sit up and actually take notice.
Do you remember that really shocking photo of the little boy refugee who washed up on the beach? Mm. And that, all the papers printed it on the front pages of their papers. And that, I think, really just kind of shook the world to say, yes, you may be kind of fatigued by news about the refugee crisis, or you may not see it as having a human face. But when you see a photo of a dead child like that, it's really quite disturbing.
And of course, there's many striking pictures, right? Because another picture, if you remember, this boy was bombed. He's alive, but I think he was seated in an ambulance or something. Yeah,
his face covered with dust, blood and all that.
But, you know, I would like to take this opportunity to actually look at children that actually moved the story along, right? For instance, the Olympic swimmer from the now refugee team. She's now relocated in Germany, and she competed in the swimming competition in
the Olympics.
And, you know, she has a very striking story as well. She and her siblings actually helped to jump out of the boat and push the boat along because the boat engine was actually, it failed or something. And she competed, right?
Wow.
They made it to Germany. They built a life there, and she competed in the Olympics. Of course, she didn't win any medal, but hey, you competed in the Olympics. So, yes, some of these stories can actually be a little bit more,
Uplifting and inspiring.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But in the spirit of making sure we shine a spotlight on children who are often forgotten or overlooked, today on Current Affairs, we will be exploring the rising issue among Malaysian children, the status of illegitimacy. Now, what factors contribute to the status of illegitimate children in Malaysia, and have the laws and the actions taken by the government been effective in tackling this issue? really quite interesting because I didn't realize this had become such an issue in Malaysia, but apparently there's been an outcry over the rise of illegitimate children in the country, and that has resulted in the enactment of the Legitimacy Act of 1961. But this act was enacted as a means for illegitimate non-Muslim children to be legitimized. So is there a way, though, to legitimize an illegitimate Muslim child?
Yeah, absolutely. When while I'd like to be optimistic, but if the law is not there, you can't do it, right? Yeah. And I think this particular current affairs today is very important for us to actually internalize, because to legitimize an illegitimate Muslim child, which by population is about 60-70% of the population of the country, it is an extremely crucial area to look upon.
No, I have to say, it's an uncomfortable topic to talk about, right? It's a difficult topic to talk about, but because it's so difficult and because it's uncomfortable, that's why we have to do it. If not, these children will be overlooked or forgotten. So what we're going to do is play you a little teaser of what's coming up at 8:35 when we spoke to Nizam Bashir, children rights lawyer and civil and Sharia law practitioner.
For Muslims, unfortunately, the answer is no. There is no statutory procedure as such for the child to be legitimated. But, of course, that does not mean that the question is settled entirely. Merely because a child is born less than 6 months doesn't necessarily mean that the child is illegitimate. For example, you may have a child being born prematurely. So if the child was born just before 6 months from the date of marriage, but if there's some sort of medical document affirming or confirming that the child was born prematurely, then there is still recourse. You can make the necessary applications to the Sharia court for a confirmation that the child's paternity can still nevertheless be ascribed to the biological father. But it's much more narrower as compared to what exists for non-Muslim illegitimate children.
Wow, that's really quite interesting. For a Muslim child, if you're born before 6 months, less than 6 months of the marriage date, then you are considered illegitimate. But really, I think let's find out a bit more. We'll be hearing also from different voices and different opinions about the Legitimacy Act of 1961. That's at 8:35 a.m. I encourage you to stay tuned for that. Or if you're going to miss it, download the podcast at our website, bfm.my. Just also another note on Children's Day we'll be celebrating today. You're also going to be hearing voices of children throughout the day today. We're going to get different children to come in and wish you happy Children's Day. Ibrahim, yeah. I know your children are going to come
both
on.
Both my kids are on, actually.
I'm going to look forward to that.
And, you know, I've heard some of the recordings, right? It's very inspiring. It's very moving. Essentially, you know, it's the call for us to be united and to be friends with each other, right?
Do you think that children in this day and age are a lot more comfortable in front of a camera being recorded simply because of the smartphone?
Yeah.
You think so? Because I know I as a child, so. I would be completely
uncomfortable. I was frightened, right?
Uncomfortable.
I would be definitely, you know, frightened by the whole concept. But right now, because you see, on YouTube itself, there's a bunch of shows where kids are hosting already.
Oh, nice.
So they kind of understand the concept of being in front of a camera, right? And I think, so for instance, my four-year-old, when he came into the studio, you know, our producer had a tough time trying to teased things out from him, but after a while, he's like, you know, he's talking about dinosaurs and a bunch of other stuff. So I find that very amusing because that's the first time, right?
He's in front of the camera. I think that children nowadays are so much more comfortable because, you know, as parents, we're always recording them on our smartphones. I know my little niece, she now puts her hand up and goes, "No more pictures, auntie, please." And I'm like, wow.
That's like a paparazzi.
They're quite diva of her. But anyway, I'm looking forward to the different voices of children that we'll be hearing on BFM. You can catch them, see whether you can recognize Ibrahim's kids. Okay, coming up at 9:35 a.m. on the Property Show today, we're going to do a quick property news roundup for the month of November. We'll go through the latest in the news in the property market with Azura Rahman. 10 minutes past 6 o'clock. Ibrahim, one of the biggest news that came out yesterday was the fact that the High Court had rejected this application for an injunction to stop Bursi 5 and the Red Shirts rally from taking place.
Yeah.
Really a huge ruling, I would say. Justice Nathan Balan said that this application that was filed by Malay trader groups had actually failed to provide a credible explanation as to why the suit was filed at the 11th hour, when Bursi had already made it known that, look, this rally was going to be held, you know, for the longest time, many months ago.
Yeah, and I think this is a very sensible judgment for us to actually consume. But there's also a two-sided story to this, because the police are legally bound to ensure Red Shirt Movement holds the counter-rally at a different location. And this was coming from the courts, right? And this idea of them having to do it in a different location is meant to prevent clashes with Bursi 2.0 supporters this weekend. And I think it's also important for us to realize that freedom of expression is the fundamental value to have in this country. If you don't agree with Bursi 5, protesting, then you shouldn't as well agree with the Red Shirt Movement actually protesting as well. But if you agree with one, if you agree with, you know, Bursi 5 having the right to express their opinion, then you also have to agree with the Red Shirt Movement to actually express their opinion. You can't have it both ways. Mm. If you agree with fundamental values of having the right of expression, then both the segments have to be allowed to protest.
Yeah, I thought it was particularly interesting what you brought up in this ruling, in this Justice Nathan's ruling. The High Court kind of pointed to the Peaceful Assembly Act and said, well, police, if you think that there's something untoward that could happen, then it is your duty to redirect any counter rallies to another location,
yep.
Which is a really kind of a reminder to Bukit Aman. Look, this is what the Act says, and this is what your duty is.
And it's worth noting as well that the Deputy Home Minister Noor Jazlan has also said that this is again another right of expression, and he says that the law is there, both the Peaceful Assembly Act as well as the Police Act, Melissa, mm-hmm. where it allows for police to actually act according to the to the law, and he also issued a little warning to Jamal Yunus, of all people, actually, saying that he should stop taunting the police. And I think, that is basically, if I may read it, it's like a green light by Noor Jazlan to actually, do the protest, but do it within the conformity of the law.
A reminder.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some other interesting news that caught my attention. Perkasa President Dato' Ibrahim Ali, the other Ibrahim, not Ibrahim Sani, Ibrahim Ali, well, he has announced that he would be contesting in the 14th general elections. Now, what I found interesting was, Ibrahim, that he said, look at Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Many ridiculed me in comparison to Donald Trump. Many called me the Malaysian Donald Trump. But in the end, Donald Trump became president.
Yeah, who was the first person that called him the Malaysian Donald Trump?
I don't know, but I have heard it before.
Oh, my God, really?
The first person that I heard say it was, I think it was at a forum, and someone said, well, the similarities are striking.
Okay.
And lo and behold, Donald Trump is now president-elect, so... let's not hope that this is a precursor, but Ibrahim Ali seems to think that this is a good sign.
Okay, hang on. If you just Google Ibrahim Ali and his Wikipedia page, you would understand why they call him Ibrahim Kata. Because...
Ibrahim Kata, is that what they call him?
Yeah, that's what they call him, right? And even he, he doesn't find it derogatory.
Okay.
It's just something that, a nickname that
he has. It's a term of endearment.
With. Yes, okay. Because he has contested in various parliamentary constituencies, including against Anwar Ibrahim, including against Patlah, including against Dr. Mahathir, if I'm not mistaken. So he has jumped around.
Okay, so this is not his first ride to the rodeo. Okay, we've got also another piece of news, and I wanted to ask you whether this changes your opinion of the way you view Chinese badminton superstar Lin Dan. So news has rocked the online world. Apparently, Lin Dan has admitted that he had an affair while his wife was pregnant. Perry, there were pictures that surfaced of him with a mystery woman on social media. It turns out to be a model/actress.
Yeah.
And the Olympic champion has come out to apologize. Now, does that change the way you feel about Super Dan and his athletic accomplishments?
It does, actually. Because, this is not the first time that an athlete, cheats on his wife.
Well, Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods, yeah. And all the football stars in the... not all. Some of the football stars in England, right, where Malaysians look up to, including John Terry, including Frank Lampard, all these people, right? And, of course, the view changes. And, And it doesn't, just because you're an accomplished athlete doesn't give you the license to behave in a very different way than any other human being.
Do you think that's fair, though? I mean, you know, what he accomplishes on the court and what happens behind closed doors of his marriage are two different things, right?
Actually, it does, because people do look up to him as a hero and people try to emulate his behavior. So if he, you know, behaves in this manner, you know, when you become a star of some kind, you have to uphold to a certain level of behavioral standards. And I think Lin Dan has disappointed many of us by, you know, going out with another lady while his wife was pregnant.
With their first child, for sure. Yeah. So I think the shine taken off a little bit there of Super Dan. 6:16 right now. We've got more for you coming up. So stay with us on The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, My Generation by The Who. Good morning, you're listening to The Morning Run, 6:22 right now. I'm Melissa Idris, I've got Ibrahim Sani and Julian Ng here with me. Now, we are celebrating Children's Day today. It's not Children's Day today, but we're celebrating it today. Children's Day is actually on Sunday. And if you tuned in to Talk Back Thursday yesterday on the evening edition, you would have heard Uma and the gang talking about homework. Should Malaysia do away with homework? I guess there was news that I think a teacher in Scotland, if I'm not mistaken, had opted to stop giving homework to children because the parents had voted in favour of scrapping homework altogether. And instead, the children will be encouraged to read books and comics and to play. So I guess we're looking at this to continue this conversation. If you didn't weigh in on the Twitter poll last night, you missed out, because out of the 179 votes, 43% said that they would like to do a mixture of doing away with homework. So I guess I'm thinking less homework, more time for freestyle play and learning.
Yeah, and you know, education is a big topic right now as we speak, because yesterday the UPSR results came out and it was actually extremely shocking. Only just a little over 1% of students actually scored straight A's in UPSR.
Why do you say that's shocking, Ibrahim Sani? Why?
Because he's a straight A student.
Because year on year, it was a sharp drop. The year before that, which is in 2015, about 15% of students scored straight A's. And that number has been consistent, right? That 15%, 15 to 20%.
15%, is it? Oh, that's a lot, isn't
it? So if for the past, say, 10 years, 50% of our students can score straight A's, and right now, this, you know, with the new program out, only 1% scores straight A's, something is wrong. Whether or not we've been testing it wrongly for the past 10 years, or 2016, some program was flawed.
Should we see this as a good thing? Because perhaps now more and more parents are recognizing that, look, it's just UPSR.
Or did they raise the standards of the UPSR?
That, like, the curve has gone up.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we should do more for our kids, whether they score the straight A's or not. You know, they should be part of a system which can take care of the future no matter what their educational levels are. Of course, we want our children to achieve better educational quality, but doesn't mean that they only have hope in the future if they got straight A's, right? And I just want to go back to that homework issue.
Mm-hmm.
I am so glad, and I'm just so stoked about a country like Scotland that is an entire country that agrees with me, because...
Well, actually, it's just a school in Scotland.
Oh, just a school. Okay, kudos to that school.
This school's been used as a model, actually.
I hated homework as a kid. Really hated homework. Did you guys like homeworks as kids?
No, I hated it.
I have to be completely honest, though. I felt like my tuition homework was a lot more than my regular school homework. So I hated the tuition homework more than the school.
Okay, now you just touched on a very fundamental issue, right?
Tuition.
Yes.
Technically.
If the school system is sufficient, why do you need tuition, right?
I thought people go to tuition just to look at girls.
Yes. Because I went for like a single stream school, right? So that was when you kind of had glances.
Actually, you're right, Julian. Yes, you're dead on that function of tuition. But having said that, right, if we got the school system correct, There is no need for a tuition. There is no need even for a homework.
I totally agree. Okay. I mean, what kind of childhood are we having? Because we go to school for so many hours and then we spend an extra few hours attending tuition. And then we spend the rest of the day doing our homework and not having enough time for TV and the nice things in life.
Okay, I'm going to point out a couple of really interesting tweets that we got yesterday as part of the Talkback Thursday conversation. There was a tweet here that says, "Funny how parents don't want kids to bring back homework for more family time, when in fact, parents themselves bring work home."
Oh, that's right.
That's a valid point.
That's right.
It's a
absolutely
valid point.
Yeah.
And even if you don't bring work home, you often bring work stress home with you, right? So you're not really quite present. You're worried about deadlines, what your boss thought of you, fight with a colleague or teamwork not going well. That's all things that, you know, kind of impact when we say we don't want our kids to do homework. But are we spending that extra quality time, or are they just watching TV?
Mm-hmm. Or YouTube nowadays.
Yeah. The other really interesting tweet was from Adrian Tai, who was of the opinion that homework equals practice makes perfect. And I have to say, he's not incorrect, but there's something fundamentally wrong here that education has become so rote. Right. Mm. So you have to,
in Malaysia,
you have to practice it and then you become perfect. You do all the tests, the past year's exams.
Mm. But I think there's something to be said about what Malcolm Gladwell said in his book, The Tipping Point, I think it was, that you need 10,000 hours to become good at anything. So 10,000 hours meaning that you have to practice to become really sharp at what you do. So perhaps what Adrian Tai is saying is something that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I think that I would appreciate another element of, you know, how do you teach children to think critically or to problem solve or to think creatively, right? That's tough.
Have a dialogue with the child.
You
when was
so?
The last time a teacher had a dialogue with a child? I mean, it's true.
Okay, so
There's so many children, though.
I don't have children, so I'm going to run the risk of pontificating, but, you know, don't we live in a very patriarchal society or a very autocratic society? Because I remember as a student, we were not encouraged to give our views, to speak up. Everything the teacher said was correct. And the moment you started speaking up, you will be reprimanded or punished for
okay.
that.
So you're right, but that was the, you know, the UKSR system that was implemented, you know, from, I don't know, time immemorial
like
until
a
2015.
Legacy issue.
2016, the whole notion is supposed to encourage discussion. And I'm pretty sure, you know, there are some teething issues, particularly teachers being instructed by the Ministry of Education to say, you know what, please allow the kids to actually have a dialogue with you. So, of course, there's going to be some pushback a little bit. And what is sad is that this year, for 2016 at least, these 12-year-olds have to face the guinea pig year, right?
What is the guinea pig?
Meaning that it's a new system. Both teacher and student or pupil is actually undergoing this whole trial period of allowing for a discussion to take place. And they get hit. And they get hit by a poor result. And when you have only 1% scoring straight A's, It may be the new thing, right? Maybe only 1% of our 12-year-olds in this country deserve a straight A. It might be that. But at the same time, I don't know whether this transition is fair.
But, you know, they can try to instill some kind of dialogue in the education system, but isn't this also a reflection of our entire country where I don't know if the freedom of speech is actually encouraged? I mean, you guys were talking earlier about that High Court decision to, I guess, effectively allow bursary to go on. And that's a good court decision. But as for the country as a whole, do we encourage this kind of freedoms of speech and the desire to speak up?
All right, we're going to be discussing more about issues surrounding our children and also our education system after the 6:30 news bulletin, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, something to lift your spirits there this morning. Give Me Hope, Joanna, by Eddie Grant. Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run, 6:41 right now. I'm Melissa Idris with Ibrahim Sani and Julian Ng. Now, this Sunday, the 20th of November, is Universal Children's Day. And this year, the focus is around groups of children who are often forgotten or overlooked. So Samuel John has tweeted in to say good morning and happy Advanced Children's Day, I guess, to all the children who are children in age and in heart like us. So I have to agree, we're all former children.
Some of us still are.
Still are children. Okay, so throughout the day, BFM will have a range of shows on this topic, from educating Orangasli children to integrating special needs children to mainstream schools. We're also going to be hearing voices of children throughout the morning and their wish for their future. But essentially, to secure a better future for our children, we should, in fact, be spending our time, effort and energy on these two very important things. The first is to fight climate change, and the second, to focus research on extending human lifespan. Why do you think that, Ibrahim?
Yeah, so I put this in, right? I think when we wake up at in the morning and we go back to bed at night, I think these two elements are key. Fight climate change and focus research on extending human life. And why I find this important is because when you fight climate change, this is the only home we get. There's no plan B. People from Leonardo DiCaprio all the way to David Letterman is now actually arguing for climate change. And you know, when you get somebody like Donald Trump in the office who doesn't believe climate change is a real thing, that really worries me. That worries me more than his, you know, effects on the markets or whatever, right?
I'm with you when you say we should be focused on fighting climate change. I'm with you on that. But I don't agree on the second one, when you say to focus research on extending human life. I mean, I don't know whether we should look to be, you know, extending human life. I believe that was the oldest human to have ever lived, died at the age of 122. Can you imagine if everyone lived to 122? What kind of impact would that put on our resources and our fight against climate change?
Well, yeah, I think it would break at the seams. But the reason that it would actually destroy the world, or at least harm the environment, the longevity effects on the environment, is not reason not to extend life, I guess.
Really?
When you think you want to extend life, I think the most important thing is how you're going to sustain those lives, whether they're going to be good quality lives. I don't think that it should stop the goal of saying that everybody should live till 100 and we should cure all diseases. It shouldn't stop there, because we should ensure that these guys who are living for a very long time would have a good life. And now we have people who can't even fund their day-to-day living. They are thinking of the next meal on the table.
Exactly. So let's just say we all live to 150. Let's just say, right? I think that would put not only just a strain on resources and the environment and the population growth, but think of the social economic fabric that would change the way we think about work and productivity, about monogamy, about marriage and relationships, about, I don't know, our relationship with children, our retirement plans. Can we still work at 120, or are we going to be bedridden and staying at home for the next 30 years, right?
Yeah, and of course, these are still hypothetical arguments, but at the end of the day, the more practical argument is on trying to cure diseases, trying to, you know, improve on the quality of life.
And that makes you live longer.
And that does make you live longer, but it does also put a lot of good in what you do. So a lot of these foundations, like Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, even Warren Buffett Foundation, they try to do this to the best of their ability on actually funding medical research. But none more important than the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, where a few months ago we saw Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook, actually argues that he wants to cure all diseases in the world. That was the bold statement that he made, right, a few months ago. And last night he issued something like a progress update on the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative on curing world disease. His argument is very simple. Curing all diseases in children's lifetime is a big goal. Life expectancy has increased by a quarter each year in the past century. If he continues to continue with that progress, average life expectancy will be about 100 by the end of this century. And that means, according to his argument, that they have cured many of the diseases that prevent us from reaching that age mm-hmm. today. Now, that is a practical argument bordering on the hypothetical argument. At the end of the day, you want good quality of life. Now, I've seen, aging population like Australia, like the Scandinavian countries, where people do have a very good quality of life at 70 or even 80 years old. I think we should aspire to be these countries, right? Like Australia, like, you know, Sweden, Norway, Finland.
Yeah, the Nordic models. Yeah. And I think that's a very good point, because when you make life better for everybody, when you make life longer, what is exactly your purpose for that? And I think that when you do that, you have to also at the same time make the quality of life better. And for that reason, I think this is nothing short of requiring a new world order or a new world monetary order, because you really need this great, big, huge redistribution to take place. There's too much wealth concentrated in too few people, so that there's not enough resources, financial resources, to go around to make life better for a lot of people. So when you make people live longer, it shouldn't be for the fact that you can exploit them. It should be for the fact that you want to make life better for everybody, and therefore you have to give them more money. I think it comes down to that.
Okay, so the initiative to cure diseases, that's great, right? But I really worry about what that would mean for humanity, for mankind, to live to, say, 100 by the end of this century.
Yes, and I see your concern, because at the end of the day, if the person is not productive, if the person can't work, then what's the point? But this is my argument, right? There are a lot of jobs that require experience more than efficiency. Policymakers, they require efficiency. But, you know, jobs like teachers, like university lecturers, like radio presenters, you know, sometimes many of these jobs, right?
I'm glad you just slipped that in.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm just basically extending our lifespan of being, you know, having a job. We don't, you know, have an expiry date, right? Teachers,
as long as we can talk.
Yeah, particularly teachers or university lecturers, the more, you know, the older they are, the more experience they get, you know, the more wealth of knowledge that they can impart. And I think there's many other jobs. If you go to jobstreet.com, for instance, and scroll down the drop down list on kind of jobs possible to be hired, I think at least 30%
Coming back to what Jules said about, you know, we need a new world order, right? So what the Chan Zuckerberg initiative wants to do, though ambitious as it is, if it does succeed, what is that in relation to if nothing else changes, right? If the we are still fixated on eking out that little bit of growth, we must have this much money for retirement, this is what we identify as living the ideal life or the American dream or whatever it is that we aspire to achieve, right?
Yeah, and I think that the definition of the job would change as well. I mean, a job is not somewhere you go and you spend your day and then at the end of the day you earn a salary. I think that's changing, and not least contributed by the fact that robots are taking a bigger role, yeah, right? So what is the rest of us going to do? But I believe that there is always things to do. You know, there's always ways to help out. People can be involved. So it's not necessarily in the future going to be a contract where you go to a place and then you get a salary. It should be that you go somewhere and you contribute in some way to the world. And that's because when you're getting a kind of universal living wage that is unrelated to, quote unquote, a job, you know, that you get and you go to and you come home.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not uncommon for us to see jobs expire. Horse-drawn carriage, you know, drivers are gone. There are, you know,
Seamstress.
You know, stenographers, yeah, right? Yeah, but you see, we adapt. And I think the alternative to not trying to find a cure to disease is to let disease permeate. And I think that is not an alternative that I want to offer.
That's cruel.
Yeah.
And superbugs come to mind.
So, you know, children of the future, you know, if you're going to school, just stay in school, I suppose. But for me,
you could be living to 100.
I think we just managed to make all the kids more miserable today by talking about such a bleak future.
I'm going to live to 100, and what will that world look like? Okay, it's now 6:50. We've got Heroes by David Bowie next on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.